The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Great tune to listen to while you're driving alone down Colorado's highways, hopefully with very few other cars there. George Brockler with you on the George Brockler Show, 710 KNUS. Going to go right to our VIP line. As you know from listening to the show, I have a very unique interest in and focus on many times criminal justice matters, and crime is exploding everywhere. To have a conversation about some of the things that are going on from that trench level, and that is a battlefield commander who's got troops on the ground in the courtrooms every day. One of the great DAs in the state of Colorado, Michael Allen from the 4th Judicial District down in El Paso and Teller Counties. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, George. I always appreciate getting the chance to talk with you.
Man, you are in the thick of it, and there's a couple things I want to talk about with you that I started to touch on yesterday, and the more I talked about it yesterday, the more incensed I got. But one of them was this change at SOMB. We'll get to that second. The first thing, though, is there has been I guess a predictable focus up here in the metro area on the surge in juvenile violent crime. And we had over the course of just a few days, 9 kids shot. But it ain't just happening up here, is it?
No, it isn't. In fact, the Denver Post did a good job of covering, I should say, kind of a good job of covering what happened up in the Denver metro over the last, couple of weeks, I guess. But just this last weekend, we had a couple of juveniles that were killed in some really violent issues down here as well. So it's not just the Denver metro area that's experiencing this growth in violent crime. It's the entire state.
Now, the headline grabbers are the ones where someone is shot or killed. Are you seeing a spike in juvenile violent crime beyond that, whether it's assaults, robberies, burglaries, other crime?
Well, in fact, a lot of times when people are shot these days, the hospitals are doing a really good job of actually intervening and saving people's lives. So we've had a lot of shootings in which somebody otherwise, if it wouldn't have been due to really good medical intervention, probably would have been a murder.
You bring up such a good point, Michael, and it's one that I don't think people appreciate. There's got to be an expert out there to talk about this. But the same crimes that are being committed now, had they been committed 20 years ago, the murder rate would be skyrocketed even more than it is now. Because you're right. These wizards in the surgery rooms are saving lives that would have been lost just 10, 20 years ago. You're right, man.
That's exactly right. If you look at and what I like to look at is the stats that CBI puts together. If you look at the stats for the state of Colorado over the last 5 years, so basically 2016 to 2020, violent crime is up 24.7% in the state of Colorado.
Oh my goodness.
That's mirrored down here in the 4th Judicial District, so El Paso and Teller County, 23.8%. You look at murder in the state of Colorado over that same time frame, it's up 51% according to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. Down here, we're doing a little bit better, but still it's up 34%.
Are you seeing with juveniles, are you seeing a common thread? Like there's a specific socioeconomic factor or there is something about their backgrounds or where they are in the county? I mean, is there a common denominator or is it just that widespread?
I'd be curious if you would agree with me on this, George, but it seems to me that what we see is what's reflected in the breakdown of the family structure. The less fathers that are in the home, you see a higher prevalence of juveniles getting involved in criminal activity. I think we're seeing that being reflected in what's happening. I think, though, that you also have to couple that in with what's happening in the legislature. We've had a huge decrease in what we can do in holding people accountable. More people are committing offenses out on bond, meaning that they've already got some other prior felony that they've been charged with, and then they're out committing new violent felonies. That was in stark contrast and on display up in Wisconsin on Sunday, right, when the guy that plowed through the parade.
That's right.
He had multiple prior felony convictions and was out on bond on some existing felony charges.
There are two huge stories that broke within the last couple of weeks, one by Sean Boyd at Channel 4 and one by Tony Kovaleski out of Channel 7, that really dug deep into mostly Denver, almost exclusively Denver, and about how they have this explosion in PR bonds. And for folks listening, personal recognizance bonds are you just sign your name and say, I promise to come back, and $1 and $2 bonds, which serve, in my opinion, no purpose that benefits the community, only the defendant. Nonetheless, and the amount of crime that has surged. And what you hear, I'm guessing, at the district attorney's meetings and at some of the other places is that, well, that correlation doesn't equate to causation. That, yes, back in the 90s and 2000s, we were locking up a lot of violent criminals for a lot longer. But even though we're not doing that now and crime is surging, those two things are unrelated.
Yeah, which is just not the case, right? If you've got somebody that has shown a prevalence for committing violent actions in the community in which they're victimizing somebody, lowering a bond, so giving them a lower bond than they otherwise would have received, is just putting somebody that has a prevalence for committing violent offenses back out on the street, thereby probably creating new victims, right? You're putting somebody that is willing to commit violent offenses back on the street. And that is a recipe for disaster, in my opinion.
There are those who are going to say, Michael, you obviously don't get it, because people that have means can post bonds, and poor people who can't post bonds just end up sitting in jail, and that's not fair to leave them in jail until such time as they're adjudicated guilty. What do you say to that?
I would say that a lot more goes into that decision point than just that basic premise. I think that you have to look at what type of offenses somebody is being picked up on and charged with, what their situation may or may not be. Do they have support in the community or not? A lot of times they may not have good support in the community, and maybe it's better for them to not be with the people that they've been running with, right? How bad was the offense that they get picked up on? I think anytime you boil it down to just the least common denominator, you're setting yourself up for a bad result, and we're seeing that.
Do you get the sense that the legislature over the past several cycles, and you know, you were a regular prosecutor doing this, that, and the other in the trenches before you got elected to be DA, but you got a sense of this. Do you get the feeling that the legislature in its current composition is far more focused on what can we do to address defendants rather than the crime itself or victims?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If you look at the trends over the last several years, what they've done is, I call it decriminalizing a lot of these offenses. We now no longer have the death penalty. So as you've rightly said multiple times, if you kill more than one person, it's the same sentence if you get convicted, right? It's just a life in prison without parole, meaning it's the same sentence no matter how many people you kill. That, to me, is a travesty. We now have lowered the penalty for felony murder. So if you commit an inherently dangerous felony offense, say you're committing an aggravated robbery and somebody's killed in the commission of that offense, now you can be sentenced anywhere from 16 to 48 years, as opposed to the way it used to be, where you would get a life in prison sentence. That, to me, is devaluing human life. Lots of other factors that go into that, too. And that's the common thread here, is that if you look at progressive cities in California, like a George Gascon, who really created a bad situation in San Francisco and now in Los Angeles, where he's making political decisions on charging and prosecution, we're being forced into that same sort of situation here in Colorado with what's been passed in the legislature over the past several years. And really, that falls at the feet of the progressive left and the governor.
What are our prospects for stemming this tide? And do you expect other crazy stuff this session leading into the November 2022 election?
My sense is that I think that the governor is a little bit leery about doing anything too crazy this coming legislative session because he's up for election. And so my sense is that we're going to see less of that this session. And then if he is reelected, it'll pick back up again in the following year. So I don't know that it's going to be quite as crazy this coming session as it has been in the last several years, but there's always that risk, especially with the mindset of some of these folks that are pushing in some really bad laws. And it's affecting not just prosecutors, it's affecting law enforcement agencies throughout the state. We're seeing shortages in people that are qualified to take those jobs, them being able to attract good police officers to serve their communities. And even the prosecutor's offices are feeling that same pinch these days, too.
Well, we're talking with the District Attorney Michael Allen from the 4th Judicial District. That's El Paso and Teller Counties. You brought this up, so I want to ask you, because I stay in touch with John, District Attorney Kellner, for the 18th.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
You two are pretty much carrying the torch, man. I mean, you got Michael Rourke up north, you got Dan Rubenstein out west, but in terms of really pushing back on this idea of let's make sure that this system is all about the offenders and not the people affected by their offending, it's really been you and Kellner. What are you seeing in terms of retention, turnover, and all those other issues in your office with prosecutors, and what do you attribute it to?
So I think that's a multifaceted issue that we're all facing. You've been in prosecution long enough, George, yeah. So you'll agree with what I'm going to say here, and that is a lot of young attorneys that graduate from law school, they go to a prosecutor's office to get that trial experience, stay for 3 to 5 years, get a bunch of trials knocked out, and then cash in and go into civil practice and make a lot of money through that avenue. When you see that the economy is doing pretty well, and it has been doing pretty well over the last roughly year, despite all the challenges, you'll see people leave the prosecutor's offices at a higher rate. What we are seeing, though, is that less people are applying to prosecutor's offices these days, and I think that's a result of the national debate on police reform, criminal justice reform, and sort of that seeping into the minds of our young attorneys that we're pushing out of law schools. CU Boulder, for instance, very rarely do you get a prosecutor out of CU Boulder these days, and I think that's a result of what kind of agenda they may be pushing up there.
Now, I am a CU Boulder Go Buffs guy, so that breaks my heart. Now, I mean, you guys have up until recently, and I say recently because your predecessor, Dan May, I think did a real good job of convincing the county commissioners that salaries matter, right? Like it's a big deal everywhere. But you guys struggle with being just outside the metro area. And even though Colorado Springs is the second most populous city in the state and you can do anything on the planet Earth right there, I think for a lot of folks that are either coming to school in Denver or Boulder to envision going south, it just becomes harder. So they end up taking these positions in Denver, Jeffco, Adams, and Arapahoe.
That's right.
But and as you know from talking to John, there's huge turnover in all those offices too. I mean, it's not El Paso. It is the state of Colorado. There was, God, I hope I'm not speaking out of school. There is a real concern in the 10th Judicial District, Pueblo, about whether or not they can maintain the staffing level sufficient to continue to prosecute crime at the level that it exists right now. I've never encountered that in my life. When I was a young prosecutor, 3 years ago, I'm kidding. When I was a young prosecutor, these jobs were so highly coveted. I mean, you had an opening and you would get buckets full of resumes. Now it's a struggle.
It's a real struggle. We're doing the best we possibly can to make sure that we satisfy our burden, which is making sure that we're protecting public safety. We are in the prosecutor's offices across the state, the last line between public safety and mayhem, right? Everything that's done by the police agencies filters into every single DA's office in the entire state, and then we have to hold that line. And I think for the most part, we're doing a really good job at that. But it's getting tougher, and I think what you just alluded to, Chosner down in Pueblo, the DA down there, he made some really strong comments on just how badly it's affecting our ability to do our jobs. And he's struggling. All the DAs in the state are struggling to one degree or another, and it's something that we've never seen before. The challenges are numerous. COVID, I don't think you can discount what that's done to the mindset of the community and lawyers. And so it's a real challenge, but we're working our butts off to make sure that we maintain public safety and do what we need to do here.
You know, for those folks that followed the Kyle Rittenhouse case in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the prosecution up there was much maligned. Two things to be aware of. One, the elected DA in that case did not handle the highest profile case in the history of Kenosha, which they don't have to. But my sense of it is the trend here in the state of Colorado is you get big cases like that, you get the elected showing up, but that requires you to have the chops like you have and Kellner has and Rourke has and all that other stuff. But the other thing is when you start thinking about a recruiting challenge like you've described, some of the things that could happen in some offices, not necessarily yours, are either poor charging decisions or good charging decisions followed by poor execution in the courtroom. That's why it's so critical we continue to stock the pond with some of the best minds out there in terms of prosecution.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. If you look back at history, I think you can see some big high-profile cases where prosecutors got out over their skis, maybe charged too heavily, and then it leads to bad results. I think Casey Anthony is a good example of that.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember that case down in Florida, I think the Rittenhouse prosecution is a really good example of that. My philosophy is if you've got a big high-profile case, people like you, George, you handled the James Holmes case. Dan May, my predecessor, handled the Patrick Frazee case. Michael Rourke, as you mentioned just a moment ago, handled their big high-profile case. We're elected to do a job, right? And that is protect public safety. And when you get a high-profile case, you better bring all the big guns out and make sure you bring prosecution to the highest level that you can on those cases, because the office is going to be judged by what kind of product you put out. And I think what happened up in Wisconsin is a good example of that. That prosecution effort was...
I couldn't understand some of the stuff, man. I don't know if you had time to watch any of it, but there were some things where, you know, getting two charges kicked out after your presentation of the evidence.
Yeah.
Holy embarrassing.
You never hear about
God.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And frankly, the ethical considerations too, where they had to drop the weapons charge because of the barrel length, right? Well, they knew that.
Couldn't have known that until trial, of course. You know, that was secret.
Yeah, they had to have known that, right, before they even get to trial. So they had an ethical basis in which they were probably required to drop that before they even get to trial.
Now, listen,
right?
I have cheated you out of a more time to talk about this, but in the minute and a half or so that we have left, can you touch upon the, you know what, I don't know if you have to go back to something or not. I could keep you through the bottom break if you can, and we can talk about the SOMB stuff, because this is pretty important, but you tell me, your schedule is the one that drives us.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, hey, great, fantastic. Then we'll continue on this topic. The other thing that I noticed about that case and that you have seen, and first off, it is my hope for you, Michael, that you never, ever have a case that occurs down there that demands you be the tip of the spear, because then the community's super lucky, right? Then we're in a super good place. My concern is with the 12 years you have in front of you, or at least 10 plus years you have in front of you, the odds of that are not good, especially with the surge in crime rate. So I hope you never have to do this, buddy. But if you do, I know that you will. I mean, that's just the way we do business here. We're different than other places. When you look at what's coming in front of you in terms of cases to be prosecuted, do you have a concern at all about the jury based on all of this negative anti-law enforcement, anti-prosecution fervor that's been developing?
You know, I think that's tough for me to judge on a large scale, because our community down here, you know, we're still a pretty conservative community. You mentioned that we're the second largest city. We're actually the biggest county now in the state of Colorado, bigger than Denver. And Colorado Springs is projected to be bigger than Denver in the next, I don't know, 15, 20 years roughly, just due to population growth. It's hard for me to tell, though, because this community is pretty law enforcement friendly down here. I think if you were in a different community, I think you would see a lot more of that stuff happening. I'm not seeing in voir dire, so jury selection process during trial, a lot of people giving a lot of credence to that mindset.
Oh, that's a good answer, man. I'm glad to hear that. Listen, you hear the music, too. Do me a favor. Hang on through the bottom of this break. We'll come back. I want to talk to you about this sex offender management board silliness that's taking place. You've already opined on it in the Denver Post, Gazette, and elsewhere. I want to hear about it here when we come back. We've got Michael Allen, district attorney for the 4th Judicial District. Until after this break, you're listening to George Brockler on the George Brockler Show at 710 KNUS. Are you going to go my way? George Brockler with you here on 710 KNUS. We have in the house, or at least on the radio, VIP carried over from the last segment. I can't thank him enough. District Attorney Michael Allen from the 4th Judicial District bringing us some tea here on the George Brockler Show. Michael, thanks for staying on.
Absolutely, George. Thanks for having me.
Two quick things before we get into the SOMB thing. I just went and got my Devil's Juice booster vaccine shot yesterday at Sam's Club. At least I'm pretty sure that's what it was. Are you vaccinated, and what do you do with your office regarding vaccinations?
I am vaccinated. I haven't got the booster. How are you feeling, by the way, with the booster?
So my shoulder hurts, man. It is and so my son, who just turned 12 on Sunday, he got vaccinated yesterday as well. So his shoulder hurt too, so I thought this would be a great time to take him on in an early morning game of pig out at the local rec center, and he smoked me twice. So he's obviously feeling better than the old man is. but my shoulder is sore. I'm not feeling a million times, you know, worse or better, but whatever. I went and did it because I'm getting ready to do a little military travel.
Yeah, it sounds like you got what you asked for, challenging your son to a game of pig, though.
He's 12. He's 12. I should be smoking that kid. And he's just like, I mean, he's hitting shots where I'm like, what are you? This isn't a video game. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Craziness.
Yeah. So, you know, we're not doing a vaccine mandate down here. I don't think that's a good idea. I think there's a lot of good reasons why people may decide it's not right for them to get a vaccine. But I do encourage it. I do encourage people to consider all the risk factors involved. Obviously, I've been vaccinated, and I think it's important to, especially in this role, to sort of stand up and be accountable on that front. But again, it's a personal choice. And I think doesn't that strike at the very essence of what our Constitution
Liberty,
says
yeah.
about personal choice? Yeah.
100%. The other question, and this may help feed the fuel for this, the fire for it, as texts start pouring in here too, asking, and that is, listen, some of the biggest criminal justice issues have been dictated by a guy who ain't got no experience doing criminal justice stuff, and that's our current attorney general. And while I know you work with him and respect him, what about a guy running for attorney general for the state of Colorado from the great county of El Paso? Just throwing that out there.
No interest, George. I
what?
Just took over the job down here, and I'm having a great time here in the DA's office.
Think about the great time you could have riding the ship at the AG's office. I mean, come on, man. I mean, just
I appreciate it, George.
I'm just saying, the dude, and again, I lost to him. Everyone will be like, you're just sour. It's not sour grapes. Look, I lost to the guy fair and square. But honestly, the dude ran a campaign of knowledge of the criminal justice system and experience is irrelevant because I'm an administrator or some sort of nonsense. And yet everything that we see in the media these days is about the attorney general showing up and saying this is how the criminal justice system should work.
Right.
Anyway, buddy, I think you do a great job. Let's just move on. We'll leave it hanging there. We'll leave it hanging there. I'll respond
right,
to the texters
right,
with some
good.
Positive stuff. I'm going to say open-minded to it. Okay.
All right.
And we'll have to talk to your wife some point. This SOMB thing, the Sex Offender Management Board, has existed for a while, but they did something, I'm going to say, bat guano crazy within the past
Absolutely.
Few days. Tell us about it.
So for those that don't know, the Sex Offender Management Board was created back, I think, in 1992, and it's really designed to manage people that are convicted sex offenders who are then on a community placement, so probation, that kind of thing, and making sure that they're not victimizing new victims, right? They're not sexually offending again in the community. And their two primary purposes, protect the public and then eliminate sex offenses, which I don't know how you can ever
nope.
you know, sort of try to achieve eliminating sex offenses across the board. But that's the two main thrusts of the statute that creates the Sex Offender Management Board. They got a wild hair and decided that it was time to get away from using the word sex offender, and they want to come up with person first language to describe
Why?
Somebody that has been convicted of committing a sex offense.
What's wrong with sex offender?
Preposterous.
What's wrong yeah. with sex offender?
What is wrong with sex offender? I don't have a single problem with the word sex offender because it recognizes the gravity of the offense that they committed. They've intimately violated some other person against their will, been convicted in a court of law, and are rightly carrying the term sex offender. And yet the Sex Offender Management Board, whose primary task is to protect the public, has gone out of its way to protect the defendant over victims.
What sort of names are they trying to come up with to lessen the blow to these child rapists and other rapists and pornographers and all them? What are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, all kinds of different options that they put on the table. I don't know what they eventually went with, but it was something along the lines of person who has committed a sex offense or person who has
engaged in a sexual offense
engaged in a violation of a sex offense, something along those lines. What happened with being just simple in our language, using the simplest terms to describe what somebody has or hasn't done, right? And so if somebody has been convicted in a court of law, so that means they've had the
full due process protections. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so they've gone through that process. They've been convicted either by a judge or a jury, typically going to be by a jury, right? That means 12 people from the community has heard the facts and said, yeah, you're guilty. You get to wear the tag of sex offender, right? That's justice. And that's letting the public know that somebody is potentially a danger to your kids or to somebody else that's living next door.
I feel like we're going to see this now play out everywhere. And so you can no longer have a rapist. You'd have a person who rapes. You can't have a convicted felon. You'd have a person who engaged in felonies and was convicted. Hell, you can't even be a prosecutor, Michael. You're a person who prosecutes. I mean, it's what are burglars? Do burglars go away? I'm not a burglar.
Yeah,
I'm a
yeah.
person who burglarized. That's totally different.
Did you see the prosecutor? I'm sorry, the professor from a college back east who suggested that we should do away with the term pedophile in favor of person who is attracted to juveniles. Can you imagine?
It's laugh
that
out loud.
In that would.
Funny, but yeah. I want to cry. It's like one of those Will Ferrell laugh cries, like Anchorman. Like, this is nuts.
Yeah. It's absolutely bizarre world.
The other thing
I can't believe it's happening.
The ACLU and these other people have approached the idea too of, hey, let's change defendant, because that one hurts. Defendant. Let's call them justice involved individuals. Have you heard that?
I have heard that, and it drives me crazy. How about we recognize that somebody that's in the criminal justice system as a defendant, how about we recognize the fact that they have made affirmative steps or decisions to engage in the criminal justice system? They're the ones that put themselves here, nobody else, right? They're the ones that made the choice to violate the law, commit a criminal offense, PC has been established, probable cause, and now they're charged. That is a defendant. And by the way, defendant is a term of law, right?
Yeah, in the civil world, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not opposed to the idea, though, of, look, okay, they're a defendant. That doesn't have any super negative connotation to it. My God, Kyle Rittenhouse was a defendant, right? But
right.
the idea That's that, right. hey, if you get acquitted of the charges or the case gets dismissed, I'm all about automatically sealing that bad boy and getting that thing done so you can go on about the world with a clean name. I get it. But defendant, yep. justice-involved
right.
individual, Michael, you are a justice-involved individual. You know what I mean? The
That's
judge
right.
is a justice-involved individual.
A jury.
They're justice-involved individual. I mean, this is nonsensical. You can't have surgeons anymore. You can have people who engage in surgery. I mean, you can't be a Broncos fan.
A witness called on behalf of the prosecution or the defense is a justice-involved individual, right?
That's right. But they can't be a witness anymore. They're a person
That's
who
right.
witnessed something. Because it's not a judge, it's a person who judges. I mean, they claim, by the way, and you may have access to this, in the articles I've read, and you're quoted in some of them, some of the person that's the head of this SOMB board, someone named Klein, says, well, there are studies that show that the offenders, if they carry around these ego-damaging titles, they're so negative, it will impact their rehabilitation. Have you ever seen such a study?
No, and the studies that they used to justify that statement were studies that had to do with generalized labeling. So let's think for a minute about maybe somebody that's got a learning disability. What they're talking about there is that sort of thing, generalized labeling. There's no study, no reputable study in existence that says that a sex offender, if you change the label for them, that they're going to be more successful in treatment than they would have been if they had the term sex offender. And I should add that there's no study in existence that shows that that's going to reduce recidivism, meaning that it's going to reduce reoffending, right, in a sex offense world. So they're really extrapolating from one type of study and applying it to sex offenders, and it doesn't exist.
One of the most offensive parts of that article, other than what you just revealed, which is they've made it up with the reputable study thing, is that the same person says, well, look, I think we struck the right balance between what happened to the victims, that trauma, and the negative potential consequences to someone of this label. And I thought, when did we get in the balancing business between victims and the people who victimized
right.
them? When did that happen?
Right. Are we considering that kid who's been sexually assaulted? Are we considering what this does to that kid and the fact that they are the most innocent victim that we ever see in the criminal justice system?
All day,
right?
every day. All day, every day. So sad. And they can't be victims anymore. Now they're people who are victimized.
Right.
Hey, listen, Michael Allen, I'd love to have you back on. It's great to hear this. I think a lot of people don't appreciate what you do on a daily basis. And it's not just in the metro area, but down south in one of the most productive parts of the state. Buddy, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. We'll have
Absolutely,
you on again.
George.
That's Michael Allen.
What you do.
Of course, buddy. Thank you. That is Michael Allen, District Attorney for the 4th Judicial District. Wish he'd consider running for AG. We could sure use someone who at least knows where to sit inside a courtroom before they start charging people with crimes. Anyway, that's silly me. Give us a call. Let's talk about it. 303-696-1971. George Brockler on 710. K to the N to the U to the S. Daddy, like me some Stevie here on 710 KNUS. George Brockler with you until the top of the hour. I'll be replaced by a guy named Charlie Kirk. And then at 3 o'clock, dude named Stefan will be in the big seat here until 7 o'clock. And then we'll start it all over again tomorrow at 5 a.m. with the maestro, Peter Boyles. Listen, there's a whole bunch of ways to reach out to us here. One is the phone. That's the bestest way. And I tell you, I am someone who I do enjoy a good interview, and I think we had that with Michael Allen, but I really do appreciate the listeners, especially to this station, and I'm not just saying this to suck up to you. I'm not a sycophant with the listeners, but you are some of the most attractive, brilliant people. I'm kidding, but I do like this part. We have good conversations on this phone, and even if you disagree with me, in fact, many times when you disagree with me, I think we have the ability to have better discussions and get stuff out. So you pick up the phone and dial us at 303-696-1971 and tell me what you're thinking about where we're going as a state with criminal justice and where we need to be going. The other way to get us is through text. Now, I sit here and these texts blow up all the time. I'm having conversations. And if you've ever texted me, you know there is a really good chance I'm going to text you back either during a break or sometimes during something going on in the show. I will try to get back to you. And then the final way, which right now is the toughest way, is the email. And you can go onto the app. You can go onto the website at 710KNUS and email me. But I'll be very, very candid with you. I failed to follow corporate instructions a long time ago on how to reset your password and how to even set up your email to reset your password. So for a long time, I have not had access to the email. So if you've been emailing me either with threats to my life or offers of money or just general, I don't know why they keep you on the radio, I haven't gotten them yet. I'm gonna. There's going to be a huge email dump here at some point. I just have not had access to it. Superstar Mark Crowley is going to help me set up with that sometime, I presume, before Thanksgiving. But so right now, if you want to play a role in this show, and I invite you to do that, it's my favorite part. Give a call at 303-696-1971, and I want to talk with you until we get to the top of the show about what Michael Allen just talked about. And, you know, we touched upon it yesterday, but this isn't San Francisco doing this. This isn't some wingnut city in super liberal Northeast America here. This isn't something taking place in Vermont. The discussions that Michael was having with me on the air about these changes to the title of sex offender, and they're not going to stop with the Sex Offender Management Board. And by the way, they lack the legislative authority to change their own name. I don't know if they're going to now be called people who commit sex offenses, PWCSOMB, I don't know what they're going to end up doing. But it's going to require an act of the legislature to change that name and know that that's going to happen. Now the legislature will show up as they tried to last year and they're going to say, well, look, I mean, we're just passing a law to recognize what's a fact already. The treatment providers are the ones who say that those are damaging terms given the paucity of research, of legitimate research that has taken place. And I think Michael did a good job of pulling the lid off of that Pandora's box. And that is, there is no real research on this issue. They're talking about general terms, including ones for kids who may be in the more challenged classes or whatever it is. I get that, right? Like you start calling kids names or labeling them. I get how that can have a negative connotation, especially if it's for something that ain't their fault. But a rapist? A sex offender? If it's not your fault, whose fault is it? Now, if you've ever been to a sex offense trial or case, you know that invariably the person that is attacked is the victim. The victim is called a liar or incredible, or they even intimate that this was someone who set this up and wanted this to happen and it was consent. So when you're in a trial for a sex offense, it's the victim who's to blame for whatever did or was accused of taking place. Now, apparently, even after you're convicted, after a jury rejects those nonsensical defenses, and in a lot of those cases, now you're made to not have to wear that moniker. And I'm just wondering what's next, right? Like, you can't have a robber anymore. You can have a person who robs. You can't have a Broncos fan anymore. You can't even have a Bronco. You can't have a Denver Bronco. You have a person who plays football for the Broncos. This person first nonsense is a ridiculous way to once again water down the consequences for some of the worst conduct in society. One of the risks that we take with a society that is as free as ours, and it's not as free today as it probably was 30 or 40 years ago, but there you go, is that when you make mistakes, we protect the hell out of your rights, but when you're convicted of doing something horrible, we tune you up, right? Like, you get punished, and then we talk about rehab, but you're going to wear a title. I struggle to understand how someone with a straight face can say a rapist or sex offender who are called a person who does that is in a much better position to not reoffend. And thus, it is really a victim-centric move to take away the stigma of those titles. Does that make any sense to you? I got to wonder if someone out there isn't either a family member of or a victim themselves of a sex offense. You be as anonymous as you want. And tell me if this matters to you. Tell me if you care whether or not the person who committed a sex offense against you is called that, or whether they're called a rapist or a sex offender or a child. Does it matter to you? Or are you like, nah, I don't really care. It doesn't matter to me. Because in my mind, it matters, right? Like, if something happened to one of my kids, first off, there would be a trial, but it would be mine. And we're going to have to mark this down as evidence, because at some point, if something happened to one of my kids and the person who did it shows up dead, I should be your prime suspect. I'm not advocating for vigilantism. I think I should be held accountable for what I'm going to do, no doubt about it. But just know that's where my head and my heart are at the moment. Whether I'd follow through with it, I don't know. But let's just pretend for a moment that you're the family member, not pretend, if you're the family member of someone who has been victimized. Does it matter to you whether the person continues to carry around a specific moniker or name that they earn through due process? 303-696-1971. It would matter to me. It would matter to me. And I think the other thing that we're hearing from Michael is that this juvenile crime wave is not limited to Denver and Aurora, two cities who seem to be in the grips of a very leftward movement when it comes towards law enforcement. And I'm anxious to hear, by the way, anybody who has a giant microphone like 9 News, 7, 4, 31 and 2, Denver Post, Denver Gazette, I'm anxious for someone to sit down with the governor and the attorney general and say, why is crime surging? And what they're going to say is, well, there's so many. It's so super complicated. There's a million different things. I want to hear, why do you think crime is surging? And then ask them, what are you going to do to address it? I mean, other than continue to pile drive the cops, what are you going to do to address the surge in crime rate? Because my guess is it's not going anywhere but continuing to go up. And with a resurgent economy, with where we're at, the fact that the COVID wasn't nearly as bad as we thought it was going to be in terms of what was going to take place with the economy. I mean, it's really come back in a strong way. Of course, we've added on $8 trillion in debt or whatever it is, but just understand that. I'd love to know the answer to these questions. What will you do to protect Coloradans? Brenda, you're on 710 KNUS. What do you think, Brenda?
Hey, George. I'm glad to hear that you're on every day. I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
I thought I was going to miss you on Saturdays, but I get you more now.
Oh, thank you.
That conversation you just had, I mean, I'm a former litigator, and I find that whole thing just offensive. I mean, what are we trying to do, just teach people more words of the English language? I mean, you are a pedophile. You are a robber. It's like we don't need to expand the number of words. And I find the whole thing just really offensive and degrading to the people who were harmed.
Absolutely.
I mean, who are we protecting here?
Who are we protecting? And they've come up with these fake overgeneralized studies to justify that. Well, in doing this, we're actually increasing the chances at rehabilitation and decreasing the chances of reoffending, which is nonsense. No study's ever shown that. And that's our reason
garbage.
For doing it.
That's garbage, just like we have to go to the cry rooms and get our little teddy bears, or we have to send social workers out instead of police officers because we have to be nice to the people that are criminals. garbage.
I think.
You know, I mean, that's why all this garbage is happening and, you know, everything's going up in flames, because we're being too kind to the offenders.
I agree with you. And I think we're turning a corner as a state. Let me ask you this before I let you go, Brendan. Thank you for the great call. When you look at November of 2022, where does public safety and criminal justice fall on your priority list of things that are going to impact your decision on who to vote?
Oh, very high. I mean, look at our cities. They're going up in flames. Look at what's going on in Aurora. Look at what's going on in Denver. I mean, I grew up here. It breaks my heart to see this.
I've never seen anything like this.
Officers don't want this. They need our help.
Maybe
they don't
want to
stand down.
Maybe early 90s when we saw that summer of violence. Maybe that's the last time I really felt like things were getting out of control. But then we righted the ship. And there are going to be those who say, hey, we went way overboard with incarceration. Okay, maybe. But the answer isn't to just dump out the jails and the prisons and figure out a way to relabel people who've earned the titles that they have, because, gosh darn it, they might feel so bad they won't get rehabilitated. Really? If their biggest issue is how they feel about their name. Man,
the guy that plowed through that parade, how many times he had a rap sheet 50 pages long, and how many times did they let him out?
They cut him.
Let him out.
Such a great point, Brenda, because we're dealing with that right now. Great call. Thank you for listening. Dang, Michelle, go! I've only got like 30 seconds. I can't get you up. Would you please call back tomorrow? I will be here tomorrow. Darn it. Geronimo, thanks for Behind the Glass. Great conversation with District Attorney Michael Allen from the 4th Judicial District, El Paso and Teller. Thanks to Pete for the transition. Charlie Kirk up next. Stephen Tubbs at 3. Pete back in the saddle at 5. And I'll be with you. Hit me with the text. Follow me on Twitter at George Brockler. See you tomorrow, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.